Well, he's right. It is me. So, oh, let me start over again. He's right. It is me. I officially hit the record button, so this program is being recorded. Already, I was gonna start off with a simple idea. None of these things that I say are, I think, too hard to understand. It just is. It's a matter of perspective. So I came across this one study. They followed 5,200 individuals for 3 decades. Let me see. How long is a decade? Oh, that's right. It's 10 years. So let's just say they followed 5,000 plus people for 30 years. And lo and behold, guess what they found out? Those that had the greatest lung volume. You know what lung volume is? Okay. It's the greatest, it was one of the greatest predictors of health and longevity. I guess you could say health also would be the absence of one disease or one problem after the other. So, what's your simple takeaway from that? I mean, I know what my takeaway is. It would be, and there's a lot of ways you can say this, but here's one way I want to say it. If your whole day revolves around moving from one sitting location to the next, let's just say you spend 12 hours a day on the internet searching and scrolling, I was going to say totally wasting your time. Oh my goodness, I've asked so many people, what did you learn today on the internet for 12 hours? I'm sorry, let me get off that topic. You get the gist. If you're sedentary all day long, if you're a couch potato, let's just say that maybe by chance you have lung problems. You might go, man, I wonder why I have lung problems. It's such a mystery. My doctor's done 40 million tests at $40 million, and he can't figure out why my lungs aren't working right. And somebody like me comes along and says, okay, well, what do you do with yourself all day long? Well, I just sit on the couch. Well, you're probably not going to have a tremendous lung volume. To me, that's interesting. Those that had the greatest lung volume, it was the greatest predictor of health and longevity. Now, let me take it one step further. You know what I'm getting at is, when you work and you move your body and you breathe through your nose deeply and you exercise or you do things to increase your lung volume, you're helping yourself. You're telling yourself, I love you, and I want you to be able to serve me and to work for the next 30 years. Oh, my goodness. One of the things that, and this is, I mean, this is common knowledge. If we were to just sit down and look at what are going to be the causes of death of the elderly, well, number one, it's going to be if you're older and sedentary and you develop pneumonia, and you lay in bed, you're probably not going to recover from that. Or, I'm sorry, there's a chance you're going to have a hard time recovering from pneumonia. The old school terminology, there was a phrase that was used back in the early 1900s, that pneumonia is the elderly person's best friend, because what you do is you're old and you develop pneumonia, so you just pass away in the middle of the night. You die from pneumonia. It's probably not a bad way to go compared to other ways where you may have tremendous pain and suffering for a long period of time before you pass away. Anyway, another article I came across, and I'm going to make this short also. They said that once a person, I mean, you know where I'm coming from, don't you? If a person doesn't exercise and they don't breathe and all they do, I mean, not only are you going to be prone to having just chronic, severe anxiety, maybe even some degree of depression. I mean, is this really that difficult of a concept that maybe oxygen is one of the most precious elements in the universe? I mean, really, how long can you live without oxygen? Maybe oxygen is the most alkaline substance that our body needs to be able to function properly. But if you don't ever do anything to stretch and expand your lungs, because you don't believe in breathing, I mean, what are you going to get? You're going to get an infection, you're going to die. This would be diametrically opposed to the person who says, I cannot wait to go outside first thing in the morning. I feel alive. I get to breathe deep, fresh air, especially after it rains multiple times. There were two neighborhoods I drove by this morning on the way here. All the power's out. And that was just all the storms last night. Who would have thought that we're having, 1st of August, all these storms? Anyway, so pneumonia, that's real. Infections of the lungs, that's real. It could be the end of you. I don't know, but do you want to live? Of course you do. Do you want to do the best you can with what you've got? Yes. Do you have to play the hand that you're dealt? Well, yeah. Everything that you do, it's a choice that you're making. You have to decide, am I going to take care of myself? So, point number two. Another article, maybe seemingly unrelated to the topic this morning. It's really the same topic. So they can document that after a person, a human being, whether it's male or female, once they hit about age 65, which I don't think 65 is old. I think it's young. I mean, there's no reason that 65 needs to be, it's predetermined that you have to go through this degenerative decline and everything's over once you're 65. I don't think that way at all. You can be just as strong as you want to be. Maybe that's the emphasis, you know, that you want to be. So anyway, in this study, they were showing that once you hit 65, you could have a lot of problems from one event. It's called falling and hurting yourself. So that could happen a lot of ways. I mean, I've lost my balance before. Oh, my goodness. Have you ever tripped over something? Yeah, you're walking backwards. You catch your foot on a water hose, and you end up on the grass. And you know what? That's not that big of a deal if you have bones and muscles that are strong. You just kind of bounce off the dirt. I'd rather bounce off, you know, a backyard of St. Augustine grass than I would concrete. You do know that people don't get up if they hit their head on the concrete. It's horrible. So in this study, they said, what is the greatest predictor of all time of a person not falling? Well, it's the strength of their big toe, or if you want to call it the great toe. But you know what I mean when I say the big toe. It's really easy for that to stay strong if you walk barefoot everywhere. I mean, within reasons. I don't expect you to go to town without shoes on. I don't want to step on a nail or broken glass or the sharp edge of a rock or just, you know, thorns and thistles or a water moccasin. No. Yeah, there's a reason why you'd have a protective covering on your foot. Although, I keep expecting people to show up at church and just, you know, walk to the pew they sit on with no shoes on. But that hasn't happened yet. Unless they're like a kid. That's different. Who cares if a 2-year-old is barefooted, right? Anyway, so that's where I'm going to lead off with this morning. Now, this first article that I've got in front of me right now, and by the way, this program is called Health Essentials. You have to decide if anything that I'm telling you is a takeaway. So what's your two takeaways right here? Well, if you exercise and you purposely expand and contract your lungs, are they going to hold more volume of air? Yes, that's all I'm saying. So the better the condition of the lungs, the longer that you live with the fewest problems. There is no human being that wants to spend endless amounts of money and resources and time being sick and being in a hospital if they don't need to. So that's why you're thinking to yourself right now, maybe I should make my lungs stronger. How am I going to do that? Well, why don't you go for a walk today? Why don't you keep your lips closed or don't mouth breathe and just breathe in and out through the nose and breathe deeply? Your lung volume is going to improve, especially if you do that with regularity. And the other one, you don't want to fall? Well, if you don't want to fall, you need to have, I know there's freak accidents that happen, but I don't want you to fall when there's no reason to fall, meaning a lot of people fall because they step off of a curb and they can't really tell what their position in gravity is. The bottom of your foot, it has the most amazing nerves and proprioceptors and other nerves. And when you walk barefooted, you have, I mean, I've told you this so many times, you probably think I sound like a broken record just repeating the same information, but it's because I want you to get this. People that walk barefooted consistently, you know, maybe all you can do is walk barefoot in the house. I'll take it. I think that would be awesome. So, if you walk barefoot in the house and outdoors if you can, hopefully your yard is such that you have a safe place to walk where you don't have a million stickers or thorns or thistles or grass burrs or glass or metal or rocks. I don't want you to hurt yourself. But walking barefoot is one of the greatest ways that you can develop the nervous system in your body. I was reading the other day that one of the keys to your lymphatic system keeping your body in good working order is making sure that your foot has plenty of proprioceptors. And you're going to do that when you walk barefoot. Or what I'm getting at is all your toes become stronger. Your feet become stronger. So they can predict longevity just based on one metric. How strong is your big toe? So just consider that today. So this article that I came across, it's an old one. It comes from the year 2003. That means it's coming up on 22 years old, give or take. Do you know what osteoarthritis is? Sometimes it's called the wear and tear arthritis. Maybe yesterday I got into a little bit of trouble when I was examining a woman's finger, and the finger was a little bit distorted and bent because she had arthritis, but I was trying to determine what level of inflammation she had, and I think I just barely touched it, and I don't know if I got a backhand or a kick to the head, but that was her way of saying don't do that again because that's bad pain. But you know where I'm kind of joking a little bit. But the issue is she has this degenerative joint disease or, you know, of one of the fingers. So that's what osteoarthritis is. It's this degenerative wear and tear form of arthritis where you start to, it affects the cartilage and the surrounding tissue of the joint where it's very, very painful when you move it. Sometimes with osteoarthritis, it gets better if you give it a rest. Does that make sense? Like if you've climbed up and down a ladder and you go, my knee's killing me. Well, if you give it a rest and put some ice on it, it might start to feel better. Well, that would be like classic osteoarthritis. Also, the joints can feel stiff. Sometimes I'll ask a person, what do your joints feel like first thing in the morning when you wake up? And they go, oh my goodness, the pain is diminished from the night before, but they're just so stiff. I said, well, how long does it take to, you know, get them lubricated? And they go, well, you know, it may take like an hour or two before they start to loosen up. And then another thing is the joints just become swollen. I mean, you've seen this. If you shake hands with somebody at church tomorrow morning, and you look at their knuckles and they're swollen like fat sausages, well, that's probably arthritis. And I've seen plenty of people before where I asked them, can you make a fist? And they can't even bend their fingers to make a fist. They're so swollen. They've lost all their flexibility. It's just so difficult to move. And for them, they might say, I can't even take the jar off of a jar of pickles. And then the other thing that you might see with osteoarthritis is you might see some bone spurs. Or some, old school, we call these calcium deposits. Sometimes they're called Heberdeen's nodes on the fingers. But anyway, if you have arthritis and inflammation and swelling and pain and stiffness long enough, you may have some calcium deposits. So the rule of the day is, any joint that stays chronically inflamed, your body's going to calcify. Does that make sense? Well, I may have covered similar information like this before, but today, I thought this is so easy. Anybody could do this. Anybody. And maybe you live in the middle of nowhere and it takes you, you know, an hour to drive to a grocery store so you can buy food because you live in the country. Now, my personal opinion is, I would rather live in the country and drive an hour to civilization and be surrounded by total darkness and the sound of frogs and crickets and animals and birds at night. Pitch black darkness where all you have is the moonlight or stars that sparkle in the night sky. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm going off into my fantasy mode right there. That'd be opposed to living in a... Man, would you like to live in downtown Dallas? Anyway, let's get off that topic. Back to what I'm here for. So, in this study, they're looking at people that have just horribly worn-out knees, okay? Now, the reason I like this, they tell you how much ginger would a person have to take to get an improvement in swollen, inflamed, stiff, painful, difficult to bend knees, okay? So there was this small human study published in 2003, and the name of the journal is called Osteoarthritis and Cartilage. Now, isn't that a great name for a journal? What do you think it's about? I'm guessing arthritis and cartilage problems. It says, you know, what if not everybody tolerates massive doses of drugs. I mean, I have no intention of doing this, but I could devote an entire program to the horrific side effects of ibuprofen and Tylenol or non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. And I don't even know if that'd be a great program or not, because people would go, great, what am I supposed to do now? Well, we're jumping ahead and we're saying, I need you to thoughtfully, maybe even prayerfully, consider ginger. Even if you don't do anything else today and you say, I'm tired of hurting, maybe you could consider this tremendous plant that God Himself has created for us. Anyway, so the name of the journal is Osteoarthritis and Cartilage. This was published November the 1st, 2023. Okay, here's a study right here. Rheumatologists were the ones that did this study. So that's going to be the type of doctor you would go to if you just have horrible advanced joint problems. And some of that could be autoimmune. I wouldn't wish that on anybody, but you know, there's things that we need to look at here. Anyway, rheumatologists from Tel Aviv University in Israel, they conducted a 48-week experiment with 23 participants. And what was their age? 42 to 85. Now, that should not surprise you, because I know you have been to Walmart before and you have seen very, very young people. In your mind, you might even look at them and say, that person is way, way, way too young to be having all these health problems. And of course, what I'm getting to, my example, their knees are in such bad condition. And for all I know, from just watching them, maybe their feet and their ankles and their hips are also. They're so bad at a young age, they have to use that motorized shopping cart, you know, the one that has a small basket on the front. I wonder if they mean something by that, if they're trying to limit their purchasing of groceries, because it doesn't hold very much. But anyway, in this study, there were 23 people they found, as young as 42, and all of them had one thing in common. They had extremely painful, worn-out knees. And when I say the knees are worn out, oh man, you would not want to trade places. So, this is a little complicated, but not really. I mean, it just may be too much information. During the first 12 weeks of the study, some of the participants, they got a placebo, which means a placebo has nothing that they're aware of that might promote healing and repair of the worn-out knees. So for the following 12 weeks, the participants who initially received a placebo, they got some ginger. I forgot to read the part about for the first 12 weeks, half of the group, they gave them a ginger supplement. I'm almost positive they gave it to it in a capsule form. And let me see right here. Okay, this is the name brand. The researchers used a supplement. I think it's available. It's called Zintona. Zintona. I have never seen that. But what they did was, this is the dose they gave them, 4 capsules a day. Each capsule was 250 milligrams. And all it was ginger root powder. So what we have here is a dose of 1,000 milligrams of ginger root powder. Okay? So, the supplementation reduced the swelling in the worn-out knee joint. Okay, the joint circumference where they took a tape measure, it decreased by 5%. Is that important? Well, it is if you're out of pain. I mean, wouldn't that give you hope that you could actually walk up and down steps or get up into a vehicle? Have you ever watched people get into vehicles before that were maybe a little bit higher off the ground, and it was a real struggle because they're so physically weak, or their hip or their knee is in such bad shape? Oh, it's just horrible. Now, you can't see what I'm looking at, but I'm looking at the chart here where they show you how much severe pain they had. They do all these questionnaires, but it went from like super amounts of pain to almost no pain at the end of 48 weeks. And I'm looking at the one where they gave them ginger. It just keeps going. The longer they take it, the better it gets. Has anyone ever had just a severe, you know, allergic reaction to ginger? I haven't heard of it. I haven't heard yet of somebody being rushed to the emergency room because they overdosed on a ginger capsule that had 250 milligrams. I mean, I'm sure it's possible. You know how messed up this world is with all the toxicity and the chemicals and all the different drugs and vaccines and all the different reasons why a person might be prone to allergies. Oh, my goodness, but I just haven't heard of it. But the longer they took it, the better they got. I wish I could show you the chart, because if you looked at it, you'd say, now, finally, I've got something I can have confidence in. So over the next 48 weeks, I'm going to do the same experiment that Dr. Morgan's talking about right now. I'm just going to take ginger. I don't even want to read the other parts to you, but here's the punchline down here. This is what I thought of. They're saying that if you skip the ginger supplements and just go to the produce aisle, and you know, along the wall they have, I guess they keep their vegetables refrigerated. Is that right? But you know what I'm talking about. They have ginger root for sale. It's the actual living ginger root. I'm pretty sure that you could go to the store today and you could buy one. You could plant it outside your bedroom window, and then at some point it's going to come up, you know, as a plant, produce a beautiful, nice-smelling flower. And you're going to say, well, who would have thought that I could have had a beautiful flower outside my bedroom window just by planting ginger? Well, you can. That's because it's alive. Now, here's the part that I want to say. You could take the capsules and you could buy the supplement, but it'd just be a lot cheaper and easier, in my mind, just to take a cheese grater and put your ginger root on there and just grate away. Now, if it's a dried powder, the dose they're referring to is just 1 teaspoon. But what's to prevent you from just grating fresh ginger into a cup and adding some hot water to it? Okay, the number here at the radio station, or the number here for Health Essentials, is 903-589-8507. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Well, good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Hey, how are you?
I was listening to you, and I just couldn't resist calling in. You know why?
Why?
The first person I met in Alaska, his name was Jimmy Barefoot.
Really?
And you've been talking about Barefoot, and you know what the best sled dog I ever had was named?
Skinny Toes?
Ginger.
Ginger. Oh, my goodness. This is so uncanny. I'm guessing your dog had great feet and was super smart.
Ginger, each one of my sled dogs had a different personality, and every one of them had a different characteristic when you go out to hook them up to your team.
Yeah.
And Ginger would just bang you with her butt every time. That's how she'd greet me. And my lead dog, he had a definite...
So she would shake her hindquarters and bump into you, right?
Uh-huh. That was
cool. That was hello. How are you, Orbit?
That is right. Yes, sir.
Well, what'd you feed him?
Well, I fed him a combination of... I would fish on the Yukon River when I would go there in the summer and work with the Daily Vacation Bible School kids in the village of Rampart, the Athabascan Indian kids. And I would fish with the natives you know those fish wheels that turn in the river and catch salmon?
Yeah, the ones that have the netting around them or whatever, or the cage.
Well, they look like a Ferris wheel that turns
yeah.
in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'd catch the salmon in, and I'd dry those for my dog team, and then I would lay those up for myself for the winter, too. But sometimes I actually fed them commercial food, too. It just depends on whether I could afford it or not.
See, that's the point I was getting. You're not going to go to the grocery store and buy the cheapest dog food and call it good for a sled dog. There's just not enough nutrients in there for them to perform.
And so much of it nowadays, you know, you can't take a chance. It could be poison if it comes from Japan. I mean, from China.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be just so lovely thinking our dog food factory is great. It's downstream from 4,000 factories that are pouring all their toxic waste right into the river. And that's the same water that we use to water our crops with. That'd be horrible, wouldn't it?
It would be. Yes, sir. But
so do the kids on the reservation, do they run around barefoot during the summertime?
Well, some of them did, but most generally, you know, they were wearing their boots or shoes.
Well, what's the average temperature during the summertime there?
Oh, right now it's nice and warm. It gets hot in the daytime. And there, when we were on the Yukon River with the village kids there in Rampart, you know, we would hike up into the mountain up there in the hills around Fairbanks and cut diamond willow, and we made a preacher's pulpit out of diamond willow. You know what that is?
I think I do. You just bent the limbs in so you could make a pulpit?
Yeah, the diamond willow has definite diamonds in it, and it makes beautiful walking sticks or something. But
you mean the wood grain itself has kind of diamond patterns embedded into it, the wood grain?
Well, in the spring, you can just take and peel long strips of the bark off because it's wet and it's green.
Yeah.
And then there are definite 5 or 6, maybe 7 definite diamonds in that diamond willow. That's why they call it diamond
do
willow.
Do moose like to eat that particular shrub?
You know something? We were talking about this one day, and that's what moose live on. They live on that willow.
Mm-hmm.
We were thinking we might be getting the byproduct of the benefit. You know, they say aspirin possibly is good for heart attack, but the moose eat that diamond willow, and we thought, you know, we don't have much problems here with heart diseases.
Is that a fact? Eat. You know, no moose has had a stroke when they eat the willow. I get it. They got
right.
That good salicylic acid found in the bark, huh?
Yeah, that processed willow bark that we're getting the moose meat from, we think maybe that's...
Well, if you let some experts study that issue, they're going to ban that tree from moose's consumption because it might be toxic.
Oh, they couldn't do that.
But just because they've been doing it for thousands of years successfully doesn't mean anything, does it?
No, it doesn't. And you know, when you got the Greenpeace people coming up there and protesting and everything, you want to get a good look at them. So if you ever
I know.
Listen,
all those people from Greenpeace, number one, they're stronger than a moose. They're smarter than a moose. They can survive in the wild better than a moose. If they had to fight a grizzly bear, they could do better than a moose, and they're taller than a moose, right?
There are definite wolf cults that come up to Alaska, and they have all these pie-in-the-sky ideas that don't make
now, why did you call them a wolf cult?
They are cults that study the wolf, and they go out into the woods, and they worship wolves. And if you trap a wolf, you're an evil person.
What are you thinking of? So if a wolf is munching down on all your cattle, you shouldn't do anything. You should allow the wolf to do that, right?
That's what some people think, yeah.
Well, if it was me out there, I would take my slingshot with a roll of Charmin toilet paper, and I would teach those wolves a lesson. That would do it, wouldn't it?
I've seen wolves come right up to trash cans in the village before, and people think, you know, they're wild. They're not going to beat around people, but they do. They come up around the village and take dogs off and stuff like that.
Did the dogs come back?
Well, they carried them off. I mean, those dogs.
You mean on their backs? You mean they put a saddle on their backs and carried them that way?
No, they carried them out with their teeth, and that's where they consumed them.
But they're just being affectionate, kind of like your dog Ginger bumping into you. Is that the way that a wolf says hello to a dog?
Yeah. Oh, okay. Those wolves, they're just tamed, you know. They got those people come up there, and we're going to go out there and be with nature and wolves and live with the bears.
Oh, that'd be like watching a YouTube video where somebody decides they want to have their picture made with a free-range bison in Yellowstone. Or they want to go touch a Cape Buffalo in Africa.
There are some funny stories.
The scariest video that I think I've ever... Well, there's two videos that I've seen that are, like, scary. One of them is Tim Wells trying to spear a brown bear from a creek bank where the bear is just above him. That's terrifying. And the other one was on African safari where this professional hunter, he shot this male leopard up in a tree. And then 30 minutes later, he's trying to track it down. It looked like... I don't see how the leopard could survive the shot. The leopard attacks him, and the guy was helpless. It just, like, crunched his arm. I mean, that is just downright scary how powerful those animals are. But aren't wolves powerful?
Yeah, they're amazing. They are amazing to
watch
them.
Is there a smarter animal in Alaska besides a wolf?
You know, a moose is stupid. You'd be on the trail driving into the village where I lived in Bettles. One road we built going ice road into the village off of the haul road, and a moose will run in front of you on that trail until you just can't stand it anymore. You got to get over and kind of bump it and go around it if it's just a little single trail. But a wolf will learn your ways, and he'll learn not to encounter you.
He's smart.
Yeah. But
anyway, I'm really thankful.
I wanted to tell you about that. Jimmy Barefoot and Ginger, so.
I'm guessing he was a member of the local Indian tribe. Is that correct?
There's a funny story about him. His dad came to Alaska, but before that, he went to an Indian village because he wrote a letter to the chief about working with them in their Bible school.
Yeah,
and when he showed up, they said, "Well, what is it? You're a white man. Your name's Jimmy Barefoot," and they thought he was Indian, and they only wanted to bring Indians into their village.
He
said, "You wrote me and told me you felt like God wants you to come here, and now he's changed his mind because I'm a white man." No.
Yeah. Everybody's got their own idea how things ought to be, right?
Yeah, everybody's got different opinions or something, just like armpits.
I'm kind of glad that God is no respecter of persons, right?
Absolutely is not a respecter of person, thank God.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for your phone call today. I hope you have a great Saturday.
Well, happy trails until we meet again.
Sounds good, buddy. Bye-bye. Thank you much. Bye-bye. If you would like to join me on the radio, there is a phone line officially open. It's area code 903-589-8507. And we'll go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Dr. Morgan, I've been a patient of yours in the past. I would appreciate your evaluation of the effectiveness of an iron foot bath. That's the end of my question.
Okay. Do you want me to just hang up and do it from there?
I'll cut the phone and listen to you on the radio. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. All right. an ion foot bath. I mean, they're really, if you were to go to a website called Amazon.com, that's just the one that I'm thinking of, you could type in ion foot bath. And they sell them, and they're relatively cheap. You could actually do them in your own home. But it's one particular... Actually, I decided to start over. Can I have a do-over? All right, here's what I want to say. I mentioned just very briefly, I didn't talk about in great detail, but in one particular study, they could determine how long a human being was going to live based on the strength of their foot. Does that make sense? So when people are wearing high heels all the time, when I say people, I mean, I think men do that now. You know, I'm not going to go into that topic. But when you wear tight shoes all the time, there's no way that your foot can work the way that God designed it to. It's just not going to be as strong as it should be. But the foot has so much to do with the lymphatic system. And so if I say lymphatic system, you have twice as many lymphatic vessels in your body dedicated to holding lymphatic fluid as opposed to just arteries and veins that transport blood all around the body. Okay, so if we have this vast lymphatic system, what is one of the ways that we can regulate that or improve it? Well, the strength of your foot has so much to do with the lymphatic system. So when people work on improving the strength of their feet and walking barefoot, they're actually improving their lymphatic system. Now, why am I saying this? Because I think that's what an ionic foot bath does. I think it helps electrically create an ionic field where it starts discharging and pulling toxins from the body. And I think there's some benefit to it. But you have to decide for yourself if it's worth it for you to do that. But I'm all for anybody doing it and trying it to see if it improves your situation. So let's just say somebody has chronic foot problems and pain. Well, what would be the harm in getting an ionic foot bath or going to like a health food store or someplace like that and just paying for a session? But you can kind of buy them for the cost of one session anyway. So, and you can do them in your own home. And just put it to the test. But I think it helps the lymphatic system. And see, one of the things that I want everyone to consider and remember, as a human being ages, you have lots of different systems. They just do not work the way that they used to. They become more sluggish. They become weakened. I think I read the other day that once a woman hits about 30 years of age, maybe 31, 32, then that's it. At that point, she starts losing a significant amount of her bones, meaning her bones become weaker year by year. They don't have that nice, thick, bony matrix and mineral structure that they used to. They just get weaker and weaker. And, of course, it probably culminates to where maybe a woman has a fracture of her hip or her spine when she's 65 or 70 years of age, just because the bones have become very brittle and weak. And so if you know that, how do you offset that? Well, you have to put enough load, maybe that's called exercise, and you have to eat foods that support bone health in order to maintain the health of your body. Maybe what I'm saying is it just takes work and effort to keep your body in good working order. Back to the ionic foot bath. You know that a human being is designed to breathe in life-sustaining oxygen. We're designed to drink water. But we need food. Food that contains, for example, protein. It's the building block of everything. But when we take that food and oxygen water and we use it to make energy, you know, you eat food, you have energy, right? Your body gives off what's called metabolic waste. Or another term that I've read, I kind of like the term, in medical books, they call it metabolic waste or metabolic sediment. So sometimes as you age, you build up all this debris in your cells. And maybe that's what the ionic foot bath is removing, the excess waste. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Yeah, thanks for your call.
I so appreciate your program. I've learned so much.
Oh, you're so welcome.
So I called this morning. I have two questions. The main one is about my eyesight. I'm 42, and about 3 years ago, I think one of the times that I had some form of COVID, I noticed my eyesight waning a little bit. I needed more light, and then as the months went on, I needed more light, and then I needed a little bit of magnification, and I can still see enough to get around, but I'm sure there's something I can do to help keep me from needing a stronger and stronger prescription so that I can read. I've spent a lot of time I'd like to spend a lot of time reading. I spend a lot less these days because I always have to reach for glasses before I can do it. So I try to eat healthy and all that, but what I tried Sight Care. I don't know if you know what that is. I took it for, I don't know, about a year.
What is that, a supplement?
Yeah, it was some sort of supplement. A guy in Texas said he was losing his sight. And,
He
and some rich buddies figured out, I don't know about rich, but scientific kind of guys.
They're probably rich.
They're probably rich now. they figured out some way to mix. And it was all good ingredients, stuff I've heard you talk about, a lot of it. And like I said, I think that kind of helped keep it maintained where it wasn't getting worse, but I just want to know what you've had to say about.
Well, can I take and run with it just for a few seconds?
Do that, yeah.
Okay, the brain is by far and away the organ that burns the most energy and fuel. It just has a high demand. It'd be like if you had a sports car and you said, sweetheart, I know this is expensive for me to drive to work, but I'm going to need the super high octane, and I get 2 miles per gallon. Anyway, it just has a high demand. It's very, very thirsty for energy, right? Well, out of all the systems in the body, your eyes are the number two system that requires the most energy. So if a person has had COVID before, I'm not going to go into all of it, but I don't have any problem saying that I'm convinced that virus was completely synthetically made in a laboratory to, do some things that a normal virus wouldn't do. How about that? But a virus, by its very nature, it requires your immune system to respond. And the eyes, boy, besides energy, they require a lot of antioxidants. I think my point bringing up COVID is it could just basically deplete you and suck you dry of nutrients. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna hit this from different angles. There is a carotenoid called astaxanthin. Have you ever heard of that before?
I've probably heard you mention it.
Well, let's just say it's a form of carotene that comes from the ocean. I think it's found in like an ocean algae and things like that, probably plankton. That would be worth a trial because I've seen people take astaxanthin and get results when it comes to their vision. The other thing that I want to think of that's like super easy is all those membranes of the cells of the eye, all of them require what are called omega-3 fatty acids. I mean, if you wanted to evaluate yourself, you could do what's called the omega-3 cell membrane index test. It's not very expensive at all, but we'll find out real quick how much omega-3 fatty acids you have in your eyes by looking at that. And if you're low, obviously I'd give you the simple plan of eat some wild cod, ocean fish, and eat some things that are full in these nutrients that your eyes need. Or you could take something like cod liver oil or tuna fish oil. Those are rich in omega-3s, and your eyes are desperate for them. There's nothing worse than not giving your eyes what they need to be able to function. So that's one idea right there.
What was the name of that test, omega-3?
It's just called the omega-3 index. And basically what they do is they take your red blood cells and they break them down and they find out how much omega-3 fatty acids are in there. And that's kind of reflective of all the other cells in your body. And I can't remember what the price is. It might be $70. It might be $49.95. I can't remember. But since you brought it up, the average American is probably around 4% omega-3 fatty acids in their cell membranes. But people that are very, very healthy, that have great health, guess what theirs is? Somewhere between 8% and 12%.
Okay.
They could take that. One of the things that blew my mind on these studies was men that smoke cigarettes, when they had omega-3 fatty acid index around 12%, they were basically bulletproof. And I hate to even bring that up because smoking cigarettes, you want to develop cancer, that's a good way to do it. I mean, the one that I studied this week was the occurrence of bladder cancer in men. Well, guess what the number one predictor is of all time of men that develop bladder cancer? It's smoking cigarettes. You just don't want to do it. So toxic.
Yeah.
What I think of sometimes is all that toxic waste of a cigarette's going right through your bladder. Your body's trying to get rid of it, and it poisons you all the way out. Anyway, let me get off that topic. Okay, so this one, this next thing I'm going to say is going to make you so happy. You're probably going to do a cartwheel when I mention what food is going to strengthen your eyes. You're probably going to
liver.
You're probably going to mail me a check for $10 million. What'd you say?
Liver.
Man, I'm dealing with a genius here. You're already a step ahead of me. Yeah, but if you ate a meal of liver and onions once a week, that's the most nutrient-dense food that I know of. It has all the nutrients for your eyes. It's like mega doses of everything. You'll never find a better source of B12 and vitamin A in your life.
Okay, yep, I love it, so that works good.
Okay, the other ones, one product that I've just used over and over and over again is called Cruciferous Complete, and all it is just Brussels sprouts and kale. But if you want to, why can't you just incorporate, you know, in my fantasy world, you'd have liver and onions on your plate right now and some fresh sautéed Brussels sprouts. What do you think about that?
That'd be great.
I think sugar is the hardest thing on the eyes of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I could... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I avoid refined sugars almost like the plague. It's,
Well, can I ask you a seemingly unrelated question?
Okay.
Do you ever feel like that you have continual ongoing negative effects that are just not resolving from a COVID infection?
I did for a long time, and then I finally got on the... an herbal blend powder that I set, like orange juice, and drank that, and I think I've pretty well gotten over it. It was sort of an asthma type thing. Every once in a while I get a little tinge of it if I'm breathing a lot of dust or something. But
well, if it were me, besides that omega-3 index test,
mm-hmm.
if you have continual problems with the eyes and they're just not resolving, there's probably two or three very, very simple blood tests you might consider. I'm not saying they're super cheap, but there's one called serum magnesium. Man, there's a lot that goes into that. I can't go through all the research, but if you've got $30, you could have a serum magnesium tested, and we'll just find out real quick what your levels are. And if they're low, we might have to focus on fixing that. The other one is called hemoglobin A1C. Have you ever heard of that before?
Sounds sort of familiar.
When that starts hitting 5.6, 5.7, that's when you're going to have eye problems.
Okay.
And it just means there's too much sugar on some level in the lining of your capillary beds of your eyes. And that's where you have, when you start having hemoglobin A1C 5.6, 5.7, 5.8, it's just that inner lining of the arteries that feed your eyes is just too sticky with sugar. And sugar is just, it just radiates toxins. I mean, free radicals are just blowing off of it like there's no tomorrow. It'd be like a diesel truck driving down the road. He floors it, and it's black smoke everywhere, and you're going, I'm not sure I can see to drive. The other test is one called C-reactive protein. That's a protein that's made by your liver. But they have that one, and they also have the other one called high-sensitivity C-reactive protein, which is good. But they measure inflammation. And so what if those numbers come back a little bit high? It's telling me that you have inflammation, which technically that's what asthma is. It's chronic inflammation of the lungs or the airways. So that'd be something to think of.
Yeah. And if those numbers were high on any of those tests, the AC1 hemoglobin test, what would be the thing to get the inflammation down?
Well, if you did let's just say they measured your fasting glucose and it was 85, I'd say, okay, that's good. But your hemoglobin A1C is a little bit elevated. That would lead me that you probably have some type of a chronic, low-grade, ongoing infection that's never gone away. And so we're trying to get to that. And so you kind of gave me a clue a while ago. You said you did better when you took like a herbal, you know, remedy to try to respond to a chronic viral load, which, man, I'm down with that action. If somebody has if their immune system is not quite, so whether it's, you know, cellular immunity. Sometimes it's called cell-mediated immunity. That's, you know, your white blood cells are trying to clear out viruses and cancer cells. Or it's humoral immunity, which is the ability to make antibodies. Basically, if those two are working together, you're not going to get sick and you're not going to have a problem. I mean, how many times have you had chickenpox?
I don't know. I don't know if I had them as a child, but...
Well, most likely you did, but do you keep getting chickenpox every year after that? No, because you have antibody production. Your body recognizes it. And all this takes place quietly. So I'm just looking for glitches in the immune system. But, I mean, have you been to a doctor recently to have any blood tests done?
No. My wife was pregnant last year, and I went ahead and had... She was getting a blood test, so I said, hey, give me one too. And she said all the numbers were good. I didn't understand most of them, so I...
Well, but I don't know if that's true or not, because I hear that same phrase all day long, but when I look at the lab test, there's highs and lows and things out of range. So it's just a way to get a clue, but if you had a complete blood count with a differential, that's cheap. That's like $8.40. If you had a comprehensive metabolic panel, that's like $10. Hemoglobin A1C, that's like $8.50. But that would go a long way. Now, the C-reactive protein, yeah, that's a little bit more expensive. It's kind of a specialty test. I think it's like, I want to say $26. I can't remember. I don't have everything memorized. That's why I have a computer screen where I can type in, which is this cost. But those are things that I would look at if you're still struggling, because the quicker that we turn your vision around, the better. That tells me that you got a thorn in the flesh. We just got to figure it out.
Yeah. Okay, I appreciate all that. I'll definitely get back on the fishing.
All right. And yeah, you betcha. I think that's a smart choice. Way to go.
Did you have time for one more question?
Yeah.
It's more of a general question.
I do.
We live in Missouri, and a lot of people around us, we've found out, have Lyme's and alpha-gal. And I just wondered if there's something you can do to prevent getting it, other than not getting any ticks. Or how to treat it.
Okay, this is not a direct answer to your question, but you might want to put duct tape around the lower part of your pants just to keep the bugs out. Tape them around your boots. That's what I used to do when I used to work out in the field all the time. Man, that's a rough question right there, because if you can prevent getting a tick to sink its, you know, fangs into you and start giving you spirochetes like Babesia or Bartonella, you're going to be so much better off. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
They have at the grocery store here in Texas. I know that Texas is an amazing state, and Missouri's probably equally amazing, right?
Oh, yeah.
I've heard it's beautiful there in Missouri. But they sell, where they have the camping section of Walmart, they sell this... lemon oil / man, I can't remember if it's eucalyptus or citronella, but I go into the woods all the time and I will spray that stuff all over my pants, and I never get any ticks on me when I use that, ever.
Okay.
And so what were you going to say?
My wife has tried a couple of different things, because children, you know, like to run around in the woods.
And I spray it on my skin all the time. I've never had a problem with it. There's nothing toxic. It's just essential oils.
All right. And that's in the camping section at Walmart.
Yeah. And, of course, I'm not trying to brag, but I saw two mosquitoes that if one got on my left and right, they would have carried me off like pterodactyls. They were so big.
Yeah.
I mean, and I've got to protect myself, right? So I use that lemon oil. But that keeps the mosquitoes completely off of me. If I don't do that, man, they are going to swarm me. And I'm not talking about regular mosquitoes. I know you know what regular mosquitoes are, but when you go down in the woods down by the creek, these mosquitoes are like a woolly mammoth flying. It's it's incredible. I've tried hitting them with tennis rackets. It doesn't work. I've broken a couple of them trying to hit them. Anyway, so think about that right there. But maybe the big overall theme is you're trying to find ways to feed and nourish the immune system. Maybe one last point before I let you go. One of the studies that I read many, many years ago, well over 10, they looked at people that aged gracefully. And so the example that I'm giving is, you have a 97-year-old man, he can still drive himself to church and do his own yard work and take care of himself, and he's active. He can do anything that he wants. Now, what's the difference between him and a 67-year-old man that dies of old age? Well, besides the obvious, there's 30 years difference. The immune system in the 97-year-old man is working about 10% better than the young guy. So this is a great topic. What do we do to help our immune system function better? This may not be the direct answer you're looking for, but I'm a firm believer that if you're around all these germs and toxic bugs, I'd probably be taking echinacea every single day, because echinacea is what you want when you're trying to prevent a problem from occurring.
Okay.
So if you said, I've got a stressful job, I don't want to get sick, take echinacea. If you said, we're going to go to a family reunion, we're going to be around a bunch of sick relatives, take echinacea. If you said, I feel great, but I don't want to die, take echinacea. So that's what I would think of.
Okay, awesome. I think my wife's growing some in the herb garden. So,
hey, cool. That's a beautiful plant.
Yeah, it is very pretty.
Tell her I said she gets an A+ on her report card today. Way to go.
Will do. Thank you
so
much,
Dr. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye.
All right. Man, I pushed the wrong button. Oh, man, I totally pushed the wrong button. It doesn't matter. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Welcome to the program.
We have just a couple of minutes left. Hi, how are you?
Well, is it possible to get a rib out of place?
Absolutely. Real easy. It'll hurt really bad when you take a deep breath in. You'll try to breathe in. It'll hurt. That's a rib out.
How do I get it back in place?
Well, if you want to get it back in place, just go to a chiropractor. They can just pop it right back in.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll start looking for a chiropractor.
Yeah, just ask him, can you pop my rib back in?
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
There are other techniques. One thing that could do it is a technique called a dead hang. But, I mean, you've got to be able to hang while holding your entire body weight. You got to be able to relax and let it stretch it out. Sometimes that'll pull it back. There's rolling techniques on the floor where you can, rock back and forth on your spine to get that rib to pop back in place. I mean, there's a lot of techniques. There's techniques where you swing your arms around to try to pull it back in alignment. But having a rib out of place, man, that can be like sheer misery. I mean, misery. Because when you try to take a deep breath, there's a sharp pain and you just can't draw a deep breath. That's kind of madness. You think, man, I would like to take a deep, refreshing, long, oxygenated breath of air, but you can't do it because the pain's so bad. So just consider a chiropractor can probably take care of that. Unfortunately, we're all out of time for today. I hit the stop recording button, so I don't know what she is going to tell me on Monday morning by my error here. So don't let Wendy know that I made a mistake. Well, I hope you have a great weekend. May the Lord bless you and keep you. And Lord willing, I will be back this time next week.